From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Beyond the Supreme Court, a president's judicial legacy lives through his picks for district and appeals courts. Since all of these are lifetime appointments, they're arguably the most lasting imprint a president can make on the country. President Obama named more than 300 judges, but dozens of others were blocked. President Trump starts with more than 100 open slots. How politicized is the judiciary, and what scope lies ahead for Trump?
No president has had a greater opportunity to reshape the lower federal courts.
We hear from constitutional scholar Mark Graber, a professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, and political scientist Maya Sen, assistant professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, who studies the political ideologies of judges, politics, and the judiciary. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. All eyes have turned to the Supreme Court since President Trump named Judge Neil Gorsuch to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia. But while Gorsuch may be the most important judge Mr. Trump will nominate, he is far from the only one. The president also appoints federal appeals court and district court judges. President Obama appointed more than 300 judges during his tenure, and in the past 10 days, several of them have issued orders restricting President Trump's executive orders. What is the state of the federal judiciary now? How is it likely to change under a Republican president and a Republican-controlled Congress? My guest today will help answer these questions. Maya Sen is a political scientist and an assistant professor at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. She joins us from a studio at Harvard. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing it. And with me here in the studio is Mark Graber. He is Regents Professor at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law and a leading scholar on constitutional law and politics. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
Mark Graber, the Supreme Court nominees garner a lot of media attention, as I mentioned. Other federal judicial appointees, not so much. Are we underestimating the importance of these lower court judges?
Well, they're extremely important for at least two reasons. First, the vast majority of cases that start in the federal court end below the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court only takes a minuscule percentage of them. So most of the time when you're litigating, the result is determined by a federal district court or a federal appellate court below the Supreme Court. Even when a case comes before the Supreme Court, the fact development is done in the lower federal courts. So if the issue is, did a police officer issue a Miranda warning? That's a fact issue, and the Supreme Court typically defers to the facts that are found by the lower federal courts. So they were just enormously important.
Maya Sen, in 2015, you co-authored a study on the ideological positions of lawyers and judges across the different tiers of the legal system. In a nutshell, what did you find? How do judges skew politically?
Right. So the study that we did looked precisely at these really important lower courts, as Mark explained. They hear the bulk of cases, and they're really the workhorses of the federal judiciary. What we find is that the lower courts are actually probably a little bit more conservative than the average American maybe would expect. The average lower court judge is about as conservative as someone like Chris Christie. So a conservative, moderate, right political actor. That's what we found. And one thing that's interesting about that is that the legal profession as a whole is actually fairly liberal. At the time that we did our study, Barack Obama was president, so he was also fairly liberal. But the judiciary is actually a little bit more conservative than that. It's actually probably comparable to Congress.
Okay, before I ask you to address what seems like an inconsistency to me, let me ask, how did you come to the conclusion? What tools did you use?
Our study is quantitative, so we looked at lots and lots of data. But the way that we try to assess ideology, which is a tricky thing to assess for members of the judiciary, of course, you know, for Congress, we can look at how they vote, we can look at their platforms, we can look at the party that they're affiliated with, but judges reason on legal topics, and a lot of times legal opinions are very nuanced. we actually went straight to campaign contributions data. So we looked at who judges had contributed to in the past. We found that certain judges tend to donate to more conservative political actors and more conservative causes, and certain judges tend to donate to more liberal political actors and more liberal causes. And so using that information, we're able to infer, and we are inferring, the ideology of these judges. So we're talking about, you know, 1,000 lower court federal judges that we use this method on.
Except it was my impression that judges, once they're on the bench, don't make political contributions.
That's absolutely right. Once they are on the bench, they no longer make political contributions. So what we do is we look at contributions that are made up until the point that they are appointed onto the bench.
So you got perhaps a pretty good view of how new judges stack up politically, but there may be a decay in the accuracy of that impression as they serve more years on the bench?
One thing that's really interesting about judges is that they have lifetime appointments. So once a judge is appointed onto the Supreme Court or onto a lower federal position, they're there until they decide to retire or until they pass away. So we have lots of examples of judges who were appointed primarily under the impression that they would be conservative or liberal or what have you, and then over time they drift intellectually and they end up being more liberal or more conservative than the president who appointed them expected them to be. So that's completely natural, and we anticipate that that would happen. One thing that is also true is that people's partisanship and people's ideology is actually fairly sticky over time. So there is evidence of this kind of intellectual drift. There are some clear examples among members of the Supreme Court, but it's not as common as we might think it is.
That's Maya Sen, assistant professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, here on The Record on WYPR. Also with me is Mark Graber, professor at the University of Maryland School of Law. And we're talking about politics and the federal judiciary. And Maya Sen, I said I was going to ask, it seems to me there's a contrast then between what you found about the legal profession and what you found about judges in terms of where they stack up politically.
That's absolutely right. So one of the things that's interesting about the legal profession in the United States is that it's actually a fairly liberal profession. In terms of other comparably well-educated professions, lawyers are pretty liberal. And one of the interesting challenges that this raises for conservative politicians, for Republicans, is that they have to recruit judges from this pretty liberal bunch of lawyers. So what do? They look for kind of important signals. They look for membership in, for example, the Federalist Society. They look to see where these potential candidates have worked. For example, they look to see whether they have completed law clerkships with conservative judges. These are all important signals that a candidate is a suitable conservative for consideration to a federal court appointment.
Mark Graber of the University of Maryland School of Law, what's your reaction? First of all, your reaction to the study. I assume you were aware of it.
I think it captures several features of the political environment. One, Republicans in Congress are tougher than Democrats. Increasingly in the Obama administration, the Republicans in the Senate slowed down everybody. So it didn't matter whether you were just left to center or way left. So part of the reason for the difference is even though Democrats have held the White House as much as Republicans, more Republicans have been confirmed because Republicans are less willing to confirm Democrats. Second, I think what Maya said is telling. There are two organizations out there of lawyers, the Federalist Society and the American Constitutional Society. Full disclosure, I'm a member of the ACS. But my friends in the Federalist Society, some of them are judges. Lots of them know judges. None of my friends in the American Constitutional Society, an ideologically liberal organization, got appointments under Obama. So whereas Republicans are clearly looking for ideologically affiliated justices, Democrats aren't. Now, a good example is Elena Kagan. Elena Kagan is not conservative, but she was no liberal darling. There was no great call in the liberal world. It's got to be Elena Kagan because she's going to push the court to the left. Compare the difference between Judge Gorsuch, who was one of the most respected persons on the right. There is a belief he has an agenda going to push the court in a way. And this applies even more strongly to the lower federal courts.
So at the most basic level, then, I gather you do see the federal bench as politicized from the lower level through the appeals court to the Supreme Court.
A bench is always politicized in the sense that there's no neutral standing ground out there. George Washington, there were people who disagreed on the Constitution. George Washington appointed only to the federal bench people who took his view. Nobody has ever said whoever gets the highest score on some legal reasoning exam goes to the bench. But coalitions do differ. Some coalitions want sort of judges who in some sense see themselves as judges. Others see themselves as movement figures. Antonin Scalia saw himself as a movement figure. Justice Thomas sees himself as a movement figure. Elena Kagan doesn't see herself as a movement figure. And this is also true for the lower federal bench.
Maya Sen, let me ask you about that. Your research was published in 2015, and you did that research over what period of time?
We have multiple papers kind of attacking these questions. Papers have been published in 2015, 2016, and knock on wood, 2017. But the time frame we're looking at is extending through Barack Obama.
Do you think, if you had done this research during the George W. Bush administration, would you have found a different result?
No. The patterns that we see regarding the judiciary, and we're finding that it's more conservative than perhaps people might think, are really reflective of the political forces. As of 2016, when Barack Obama was still president, he had a Republican Congress. And so perhaps Barack Obama would have wanted to appoint judges that were more like-minded, center-left, or even more liberal than that. But he was actually really constrained by the preferences of Republicans in Congress. We know that there are a lot of vacancies for which Obama did have appointments lined up that the Senate just refused to vote on. So Obama, over the course of his tenure in the White House, he did have to modulate his own preferences and what he wanted to see in terms of his appointments in order to get them through. You know, presidents are not really unconstrained here. They have to operate within a broader political environment, and they face political realities in getting their appointments through. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting is that now we have a Republican in the White House and we have a Republican-controlled Congress. We see that right now we have a moderate right judiciary. I expect that in the years to come, it'll become more conservative.
There's a second reason. The lower federal courts, the judges, have been complaining of being understaffed. So first, there are openings that haven't been filled. So it's not simply the case that Donald Trump has to wait for someone to die or resign, but there are lots of openings. Second, the understaffing has been a claim that, in fact, we need more federal justices. So if there are right now, say, 14 justices serving on the Seventh Circuit, we really need 20 given the volume of business. Historically, the federal judiciary expands. When one party can control all the relevant branches of the national government. So when Congress creates, say, 50 new judgeships, they know those 50 new judgeships will be staffed by people sympathetic to where Congress is. So it would not surprise me to see a bill expanding the federal judiciary, the lower federal courts, in the near future, giving Trump even more appointments, skewing the court even further to the right.
One thing that's interesting, I actually pulled the numbers this morning. As of today, there are 116 vacancies in the U.S. courts out of about 890 total judgeships. So that's about 13% of the entire judiciary is vacant right now. So Trump actually comes in with a very strong position with regard to these vacancies. Off the bat, he's going to be able to appoint 116 lower court federal judges. These are people who are going to be on the courts for 40, 50 years moving forward. So this is really a enormous opportunity that Trump's been handed to really put his imprint on the federal courts.
That's exactly what I want to pursue. We have to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to look further into this question of how politicized the lower courts are, what the vacancy picture is, and we'll touch on the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about the federal judiciary, its current state, and how it's likely to change under the Trump administration. My guests are political scientist Maya Sen, assistant professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, and Mark Graber, a professor at the University of Maryland School of Law. Mark Graber, this picture that Maya Sen painted for us, 13% of federal judgeships are open at this point. How unusual is that for a new administration?
Well, it's extraordinarily unusual, unprecedented, and as I indicated, it's likely to expand because the federal judiciary may expand. But no president has had a greater opportunity to reshape the lower federal courts.
Mark Graber, when we talk about a politicized judiciary, do you see it play out in rulings?
Yes, and sometimes. And that is, we may take for granted a judge is going to be political in the sense of the judge have belief about controversial subjects. Is capital punishment unconstitutional? Liberals are inclined to say yes, conservatives no. Unsurprisingly, judges appointed by liberals are more inclined to strike down death sentences than judges appointed by conservatives. And I can change the example, but this would be true of the past 225 years. It is true of every court in the world, and it's not going to change. Then there's a different sense of being political. In some countries, litigants of the dominant party almost always win, even when they're advancing cases that are, say, inconsistent with the dominant party's ideology. In some ways, one of the great cases in American history is United States versus Nixon. This is the Nixon's tape case, where the Supreme Court, including four Nixon appointees, unanimously voted against Nixon. Now, on one hand, they were actually voting for Nixon. Nixon, if people can recall, campaigned that he was going to appoint judges who favored the prosecutor. Well, in U.S. versus Nixon, all of Nixon's judges favored the prosecutor. They acted on their conservative ideology, but they did not act to support their conservative sponsor. The most we can hope from a judge is not that the judge will lose their ideology, but that the judge will apply the ideology no matter who the parties are. So if the judge is a liberal and applying a liberal ideology means a conservative wins, for example, a judge believes in broad free speech, that means hate speech codes may be unconstitutional. The Nazi gets to speak. What we do not want is judges who are sensitive to the parties rather than to the issues. That's where we hope not to have a politicized court.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with Mark Graber, a professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, and political scientist Maya Sen, assistant professor at the Harvard Kennedy School. We're talking about politics and the federal judiciary. Maya Sen, your 2015 study found that the average judge is more conservative than the average lawyer. How can that be, given that the vast majority of judges are lawyers?
That's what led us down this path of investigating the process by which ideology becomes important in judicial selection. If we think that judges are drawn from a pool of attorneys, which they are, we would expect to see the judiciary actually resemble the nation's lawyers ideologically. This is what suggested to us that ideology actually plays a pretty important role in the selection of judges. Now, I think one really important point is that lawyers are actually pretty liberal in the United States. The average attorney is approximately ideologically comparable to someone like Bill Clinton. In seeing that the judiciary is actually more conservative than this, one way to interpret this is that this is great. This is actually introducing a fair amount of ideological diversity into the nation's courts. It is introducing politicization and an important role of ideology in the selection of judges, but it is also introducing a different perspective. You know, on the one hand, it is evidence of politicization, but on the other hand, it's introducing more of an ideological diverse viewpoint.
Mark Kraper, how does politicization of the lower courts impact people like you and me?
Well, one way it may impact people like you and me is if we have judges who are more concerned with parties, then just simply in the ordinary trial, we may have a judge who is biased, who's making rulings favoring one side that aren't based on some theory of the law, but because the judge wants a particular party to win. To use a very classic old example in the South, it may be if we had in 1920 an African-American suing a white person and issues of hearsay came up, well, the rulings would always be on one side, no matter what the hearsay rule is. A hostile judge can make ordinary litigation a nightmare.
One thing that seems deeply unfair and unsettling is this idea that who appointed a judge really shouldn't matter when it comes to death penalty sentences or incarceration or deportation, as we're seeing right now in the news. We had several Obama-appointed judges issue injunctions against Donald Trump's executive order on immigration. And immediately the conversation became political. Well, these are Obama appointments. This is a Republican president. Of course, they're going to rule against the White House right now because they're Obama appointments. This talk, I think, is damaging to the legitimacy of the judiciary.
Maya Sen, I want to make sure I understand your point, because if you have traced a clear politicization of the judiciary, isn't it to be expected that there would be then public discussion from that viewpoint if judges appointed by one president or another make rulings? They will be viewed as political.
That's actually an excellent point. One thing that I think complicates this picture is that we become very uncomfortable talking about judges having an ideological valence. So we will see that when Judge Gorsuch goes to his confirmation hearings, there won't be much talk about his ideological stance. There won't be much talk about his party affiliations or his connections to more conservative groups. You're right to point out that there is a fundamental tension that we're not resolving here, with ideology being both very important but also tarnishing, I think, the impartial reputation of the courts.
Though in some sense it's inevitable. So judges like to make the analogy of an umpire, just calling balls and strikes. Turns out I actually paid my way through school being an umpire. And as every sports fan knows, some umpires call them tight. Some let them play. Some call the high strike. Some have a narrower strike zone. All umpires have philosophies that guide the way they make decisions. All decision makers interpreting a legal code have a philosophy. It is inevitable that the judge will have a philosophy. So all we can ask is consistent with an ideology, but it be a judicial ideology and not some other kind of ideology.
What do you think the impact on the Supreme Court would be going forward if the Senate invokes the so-called nuclear option that would prevent Democrats from filibustering the nomination of Neil Gorsuch and would not require 60 senators in order to approve his nomination?
Before I even get to that, I think what we're seeing on the ground right now in these reports really upend the relationship of the three branches of government. The federal courts historically have had neither the power of the sword nor of the purse, so they rely on their reputation and the respect that the White House and the executive and Congress have for them in following their rulings in order for those rulings to carry any weight. With regards to the Supreme Court, I don't see the issue of the filibuster actually fundamentally altering the composition of the court. But what I do see altering the composition of the court in the next few years is just the age of the justices. You know, in the immediate future, Gorsuch's appointment is not really changing things on the Supreme Court, but one more replacement of Kennedy, Ginsburg, or Breyer would change things quite a bit.
I appreciate your both talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Graber is Regents Professor at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. Maya Sen is a political scientist and an assistant professor at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow.